Special edition of Love Baths, Love Talk, waiting Sona Jabarte, who is the International Festival and Arts and Ideas Visionary Awardee. She will be here sometime this month, at the end of this week, the middle of the Thursday, I believe, for the Visionary Leadership event. And I am so delighted to get to talk to her because I am such a fan of her music. And I first came to know of her, I was watching CBS Sunday Morning, as I do every Sunday, and they were showcasing her and her music ability around a particular instrument called the kora. And so I was just fascinated by her, this story, the history of this ancient instrument. And so I, of course, go to Spotify and download everything that she has been on, created, composed, all this music. And so when I found out that she was a visionary awardee, you know, I get in touch with my International Festival of Arts and Ideas hookup. And I said, listen, I must have opportunity to talk to her. I must. So we are going to have this conversation, and soon she'll be signing on for, you know, 25-minute, 30-minute conversation about her, this work, this music, and why this particular music resonates with her. Even though I know she's from Gambia and England, some things are just not so obvious why people do what they do. So I'm looking forward to having the conversation. So thanks, Harry, for this creating this special opportunity for me to do this. And I'm looking forward for her to log in at any moment now.
Hello.
Hello, Sona. Hello? How are you?
Oh, it is working. I'm fine, thank you. How are you?
I'm well. Welcome. Congratulations on being the leadership awardee for the International Festival of Arts and Ideas this year. We are delighted and excited to have you be in New Haven.
Oh, wow. Okay, great. Yeah, thank you. Thank you. I actually didn't know I had won an award. I didn't know. What award is that, sorry?
Well, it's the Visionary Leadership Award. So it's
great.
You this year. So I'm excited.
Oh, nice.
Hey, tell
nice.
You.
Excellent. Thanks. Thanks for breaking the news.
Maybe I shouldn't.
No, it's good. It's good. There's a lot of things going on. So these things are getting lost in the way. Yes.
Well, let me tell you, I discovered you. I watched CBS Sunday Morning News a while back and you were featured. I didn't know of your music until I saw you on that show, and I was fascinated by your commitment to this ancient instrument, and that you're like one of the few women in the whole wide world that not only can play it but can compose on it. And I just wanted to talk to you about what does that mean for you. This instrument is usually taught to men in Gambia, where your people are from. And so your grandfather taught you, your father, you studied under your dad. Was that like to have this bestowed upon you? I mean, I'm believing that you wanted it and they saw that you wanted it.
Yeah. Actually, well, I guess I'm not sure if it was that they saw that I wanted it, but I think this is something that let me start from the beginning. It was my elder brother that actually first started to teach me, and then it was later that I decided that this would be more than an enjoyment, but an actual career path for myself. Not because I chose it, because of the fact that it's different, or that no one has done it before. That was actually the major hindrance, not inspiration for me. It was something I resented hugely, being the only one. I wanted, as most young people will do, is to fit in, and to be accepted and to be normal. And so it's something that I had to learn over time. And I'd say probably only until probably 10 years later or so, I started to begin to accept it and embrace it, and feel that this is something that is positive rather than negative for myself.
And so did you play other instruments and said, let me concentrate on this fully? Or, I mean, do you play other instruments
Yes,
as well?
yes, yes, yes. So I was studying other instruments as well. Not before the choir. I studied the choir first, but then I started to learn other instruments alongside that. And then also composition became a major area of study at music college, which was great because composition allowed me to be a lot less committed to one particular genre over another, which I always struggled with because I was learning piano, cello, harpsichord, and a whole bunch of other stuff. And that obviously carries with it a very specific genre of music, which always was an either or. It was never accepting of my own musical alignment of mundane music. So composition allowed me this very special space to be able to actually still live in both worlds without them competing with each other. But after coming through that, it still was for me that natural attraction to really focusing on the core as an instrument, and studying it properly, which is why I then went to my dad and started that process with him.
And so, what must it be like for you to take on the gravity of an instrument that is so old, and male dominated? I mean, just 100% male dominated. What is that like when you tour and explain and talk about your commitment and care of, because there has to be some kind of care component to continue to play an instrument that's like, centuries old.
Did you say care component? Did
Care.
you say?
Yeah, care.
Yeah, I think I would say it's been a very retrospective journey, honestly. The drive that has pushed me in this direction has not been mental, and it's not been something that I've ever sat down to analyze as I went through that journey. It's more a matter of pushing for myself to be in a space that felt right and that I had a drive to be in, but then having to figure out and reconcile what impact that has, how that I process that mentally, how do I also process the comeback of that, the repercussions of it. I'm still figuring that out to this day, and I think that journey has not ended and will not end until I'm finished, I think, in terms of really figuring out and understanding the repercussions of that and how that impacts the wider society. Going into motherhood, that was a whole new journey, and having a male child that was interested in a tradition within a male tradition, but now being a mother to teach in rather than being a father, and how I kind of had to then to navigate that. And that's still unfolding, right? That's still a story that is unfolding in terms of being the inheritor, the one who is passing on the inheritance to my son. So I think that it's something that is still being written in many ways for myself, and for the tradition, actually.
And so do you feel some responsibility to continue to carry an ancient instrument into the future? Like, do you feel some responsibility to put this out in the world? I mean, you probably are one of the best spokespeople for this, right? Like, you're out there, people see you, they're starting to understand the story. I mean, what is that like?
Well, I think this story goes way beyond the instrument. I think the instrument is just so happens to be what is in my hand, just like a pen is to a piece of paper. It's not the pen, it's what you write, that's important to me. And the kora is really an instrument, meaning an instrument not as a musical instrument, but a means of writing that story. And so the biggest story for me beyond the instrument is really the idea and the concept of bringing traditions into the current spaces that we're in, and an understanding that as Africans, these traditions still define very much who we are, where we've come from, but most importantly, also where we are going. And I think the process of disassociating yourself from your traditions, your cultures, maps out a journey into the future that is a one of disassociation, which is what I'm trying to combat. I'm trying to bring a sense of, to all Africans, not just females, but to males and females and those in Africa or out of the continent, that traditions and culture are an innate sense of our identity, and we must find a way for the next generation of upcoming people to be able to find a voice for themselves within our traditions and to carry them forward. They brought us this far, right? And for me, as I always say, so may they go on for centuries more to enable us to find this that space to have a voice for ourselves in the future.
And so do you feel like, Sona, that you struggle, or is there a struggle to bridge the ancient with the contemporary, right? Because I'm listening to all your music, and I hear the ancient music, but I also hear
The
very
contemporary.
contemporary.
Correct. Well, that in itself is a political conversation, right? Because there isn't a struggle. There is no struggle, and there never has been a struggle for there to be a bridge between the so-called ancient and the modern. What there is a struggle against is the very structured and deliberate structure that has brought this sense of ancient versus modern. That's something that is a construct, and it's a construct that was not created by Africans. This is a construct that has been created and sustained through that colonial outlook on Africa as being a museum piece for the rest of the world, as an example of what primitive society is like. And it's in the interest of the rest of the world to preserve that image. And so what I'm trying to do is to break away from what I see as a digression from our natural growth and journey, which is to say, no, there is no difference between what was and what is and what will be. We are on a continuous journey, and that is normal for every single human society around the entire planet, that they continue to evolve and grow. Traditions change. The Kora was not existing 300, 400 years ago, and yet the repertoire was. So that instrument at some point became adopted and now is considered traditional. Why are we not continuing that story? Why have we now stagnated it and say that this is now a permanent preserved piece of historical architecture that we cannot move? And in order for it to be African, it has to be ancient. No, it doesn't, is what I'm trying to say. And that's the narrative I'm trying to change through what I'm doing.
And so it sounds to me, Sona, and I was just in Senegal for about 3 weeks, and I saw some elder men playing the kora, and it for me, having these conversations with some of these musicians, it speaks very politically to me. Like I don't feel like the composition of the music and politics are separate. Are they separate or are they one?
They're absolutely one. They're one.
And that's pretty powerful to clearly stand in that space of the composition is political, the music is political, you know, the story is political.
Well, again, this is why I keep having to refer back to the structure and the outlook that we as a people have, and I'm talking specifically for Africans, to look at our own cultures has not is not a structure that we have created. So it's a mindset that is foreign. If you look at music and try to understand whether or not it is political, that is a European mindset. Music is society. Music is people, and that is an African concept. So again, I'm raising awareness of questioning our even our thought processes that we have been indoctrinated to have. Even when we are visiting our own cultures, we are still coming with a foreign mindset to even consider that these things are dichotomies. They're not, and it's totally normal because the context in which these traditions were born or have been evolved are in the very context of society and its function within society, which is political, which is social, which is all of the important things that we have within our human existence. So those are not things that are foreign within the African cultural context at all.
So when people come to your concerts, when they listen to your music, when they stream your music, what is the takeaway that you hope that they get?
I hope that they have a taste of looking at a representation of African culture in a different light for a change. A light that allows them to experience and be immersed in rather than an observator at something. And I think that is part of that journey for me of rehumanizing the African people generally in history, is rehumanizing them rather than them being an object of study that we can dip in and out of and enjoy as an ethnic, interesting, fascinating, object of study. Why can we not have an experience that actually includes us, and that us being, you could be from anywhere on this planet, it doesn't matter where you're from, there is ability to share in that musical experience or cultural experience as an equal. And that's really what I want people to have a taste of.
And so when you are composing, what do you hear? What inspires you? I mean, are you thinking there are artists out there that you think you'd like to play with or do something with? Like, how do you hear music and how do you transfer it into a composition?
It starts as a feeling. And for me, a feeling is the inception for every point of communication, whether it's musical or linguistic. It starts with a feeling. What is it that I want to express from inside out? And then it's a matter of searching, not creating, searching for the right sound or sonic that will express what it is that is inside. And that's really for me the process of creating music in that sense.
And so, what do you think? What do some Africans say about you and what you're doing and the way that you present music? Like, what is there? I'm sure there's a huge embracing, and I bet a bit of a pushback. I don't know.
It's really hard for me to kind of engage effectively in those conversations. I always feel like other people are the way better at capturing that and analyzing that I am, because I'm so focused on what I'm doing. I spend very little time looking up. If I did, I don't think I would have got this far, honestly. And that's part of my strategy, is always just to keep moving forward and not to keep waiting for approval or to keep gauging where people are at. And so I'm kind of slightly underqualified to really answer that question very effectively. Although I have to say that I have noticed, or what I do absorb in my interactions with Africans globally, not just on the continent, but in diaspora too, is that there is a huge sense of ownership, which I think is incredibly inspiring to me. No matter where you're from in Africa, no matter where you're from in the diaspora, what has been so inspiring to me is that communal sense of ownership on what I'm doing. And I think that for me gives me a lot of hope, because this has been, the African story has been so much centered on divisiveness and exclusivity. And so for me, it's very warming to actually feel that I'm part of a story that is really about inclusiveness and ownership. And although I'm representing a particular part of Africa in a particular setting, this is a much bigger story than that. And I want everybody to feel that there is that sense of ownership on top in relation to what I'm doing.
And so when you talk to young musicians coming up, what do you say to young musicians, particularly young women musicians who are coming up and have to fight a little bit harder than male musicians to get into spaces?
Well, I mean, there's women, there's also, I think, women of African descent. I would have to focus it on that particularly, only because of the fact that's maybe the area that I come into contact with most, especially in the context of, being in West Africa. And I think for young women in that cultural context, it's about trying to make sure you can contribute to the holistic empowerment of them through their own education, through the ability to feel that they can contribute to having a different opinion or a different feeling to society, supporting them to be able to pursue whatever it is, whether it is accepted or not. And that is very much a kind of all-in progress involvement, because it's difficult to kind of just dip in and out of people's lives to really make that change. You kind of have to be really consistently and sustainably there, which is why I focus so hard on having an educational institution that doesn't just do a one-off thing here and there. This is something that supports them through the entire process, because it's very difficult. It's extremely difficult, especially in the society that I'm from, that is not even relating just to women and to being African, but on top of that, also the whole caste system that we have within society. That's another whole barrier that they have to get through. So there's a lot of hurdles, but the most important thing that I feel that they need to get through is a sense of self-worth and determination. Without that, it doesn't matter how much you give them. It's very difficult to break through boundaries without those things.
And so in your travels, I imagine, Sona, that you spend a you spend, even though I know you keep your head down and you focus on what you're doing, I imagine that you spend some time noticing or engaging in what is happening across diaspora of Africans everywhere. I mean, I would imagine that you sound as though you pay attention deeply about what is happening to Africans across the board.
Yes, of course. I mean, it's hard not to.
Well, I don't know if it's hard not to, because I know people who don't, but
Well,
the
no,
fact
in the
that
field that I am in, I think within this context is very hard not to. Yes.
And so and so your music takes you everywhere. I mean, this music that you're producing takes you everywhere. How do you find the time to sort of relax, calm your brain, put down the instrument? Like, what do you do? What do you do to chill a little bit?
That's something I can just say is work in progress. I think that's the best way I can answer that question. Work in progress.
Are you one of these people that is always working on music? Like, you hear music everywhere you go?
No, right now and for the past couple of years, actually, engaging in music has been a big luxury, and something that I don't get to do it often, because I'm running an academy and obviously touring and running my own business. It's absolute, work full on, that often doesn't require, sorry, doesn't engage me in music. So even music has become a luxury for me now to play music. So I'm hoping to get to the point where I can, start connecting more with creating music and getting out from behind all of the other work that I'm doing. But
And
as I said, this work in progress.
so the Academy is your brainchild to what exactly does the Academy do? What do you
So,
want it to do?
well, the Academy is really the sum total of really everything I'm doing. And the most important aspect of what I do, actually, way beyond music. And the Academy is dedicated to curriculum reform. This is addressing a huge problem that we have on the continent, where we are still disseminating an education system that was implemented during the colonial period, which was there expressly to disempower Africans and to inhibit their progress. And whilst we've done so much, obviously, to try to improve that system over the years, and we're talking, we are, 50 plus years for some countries after independence, yet we still haven't actually decolonized our education system. That's a major hurdle that is yet to be seen continent-wide. And so this academy is dedicated to producing a curriculum which is liberated from that colonial entrenched structures, in order to actually develop students from a perspective of being African, considering that they are Africans on the African continent. So it sounds like a stupid thing to have to say this long after independence, but it's something we still have to say. And what I'm doing is obviously then also raising that awareness of the need for that to be implemented in, other countries across Africa. But interestingly, though, what I've learned over the recent years is this is not just an African problem. This is
Oh
something
no. Welcome to
that is very
America.
pr correct, correct. I mean, I've just closed up a meeting at Berklee College right now, and these are very active conversations that we're having in the context of the education system, and it still, frustrates me and angers me that this isn't a work that is even just exclusive to the continent. The idea that you can study jazz, that you can study the blues without actually understanding or studying the history of the people that gave birth to these musical forms is ridiculous, So for me, this is a worldwide problem, right? Still very much one cannot, try to make it a naive answer that, oh, we didn't know. This is structured, right? This is a system that has been set up and is still being played out despite being in 2024. And so the importance of what I do at the Academy is really pushing for those changes and bringing accountability to the educational institutions and the educational structures within those countries to make those changes on an actual sustainable basis.
Well, thank you for that. I think you have summed up what we are dealing with here in these United States. And if you know anything about what's going on here with the banning of books and legislation to stop teaching African-American history,
oh, right.
Black history, because it is upsetting to folks, to white folks, then you have some sense of what we are dealing with here.
Well,
so,
absolutely. But here's the thing. It's not African-American history. It's not Black history. It's world history. It's history.
Yes.
And this is what I'm actually trying to combat, even at my academy. You know, this is history. These are facts we're talking about, not opinions and feelings. These are facts. And for us to be well-rounded individuals, no matter what race or where you're from, we need to be learning the facts of history. And that is universal wherever we're from. So this is really still an ongoing battle. Absolutely.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I am wildly looking forward to seeing you and hearing you on Thursday. I cannot wait. I am such a fan. I've downloaded all your music. And if I can get it on vinyl, I will buy it on vinyl.
I'm glad you said that. We're just starting the process of getting that out. So I appreciate your affirmation of that.
I love it. I mean, I would love to have some vinyl of yours because I just think you are amazing. And to be a sister out here leading this music and bringing it to the people in such a way that is engaging is amazing. So I look forward
Thank
to
you.
meeting you. I hope I can on Thursday. But welcome
yes,
to
sure.
New
Yeah,
Haven.
Please do. Yeah. Thank you so much. If you, yes, please do. Thank you. I'm looking forward to it very much on Thursday.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Jobate.
Thank you. Thank you.
And thank you to your people
thank
for
you.
Coordinating. Hi, this is Babs Rawls Ivy from New Haven, Connecticut, and you're listening to WNHHLP 103.5 FM, streaming live at newhavenindependent.org.